So we are ready to start with our second presentation, and this one will be given by Kai Kammers, and it will be about EQTS and recount to package. So yeah, let's see.
Hello. Oh. So hello everyone. So my name is Kai. I'm recently started my first faculty position at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, and I just transferred from the School of Public Health to the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, and I'm in the Cancer Center in the Division of Biostatistics and Bioinformatics. And today I'd like to talk about a project that I worked on with a couple of statisticians. It's called Recount2, and I will tell you something about that. So the entire project involves RNA sequencing data from humans, and just an overview slide. So on the top row, we have like a part of our DNA, and we have some exons and some introns, and in the second row, we have the RNA single-stranded, and we still have exons and introns, and when it gets transcribed, the exons like stick together in different combinations, and that's what we are called alternative splicing. So that means some transcripts can have all five exons for this gene, and some can only have four, or they can have a different order. And why is this important? Because each of these transcripts or isoforms of the genes may code for different proteins. And so that's why we can look at different layers when we do RNA sequencing. We can look at the exon level counts, we can look at transcript level counts, or just gene level counts, so whatever layer we want to look. And so there's a software package called RailRNA, which take all these 10 million or 20 or 30 million short reads that you get out of the sequencer and aligns them back to the genome. And just to illustrate how it works, let's go back. We have a cartoon here of like one gene with three exons, and each of these like bars, one of these reads, and when we align them back to the genome, they usually map to some known annotations or some known regions, which are here the exons. And we can see some of these reads, they split across those exons. These are called so exon-exon junction reads, or just junction reads. And what we can now generate is for each single base pair, we can generate, so we can calculate a coverage. For example, here we have a coverage of 11, that means 11 reads map to this locus. And we can do that for the entire genome. And that's roughly the data that we use. And so we thought it may be important to look in the internet and see how many samples from humans are available. And there are three big data platforms. So it's GTEx. It's a gene tissue expression project, roughly 10,000 samples, or 10,000 different experiments. So there, some of them are from the same samples. We have the Cancer Genome Atlas, also 11,000 samples, and the Sequencing Read Archive with 50,000 samples. And what people typically do when they try to do gene expression experiments with data that's publicly available, they download the raw data, and then they have to do all these alignments, which is computationally expensive, and to just generate a gene expression matrix. So what we thought, we do that for all of you who wants to use these publicly available data set. So we use the Aligner RailRNA, which is like mostly written by Abby. We use Amazon Web Services, and we aligned all these 70,000 human samples back to the genome. So these were roughly 5 trillion reads, and it comes down to costs of like roughly $1 per sample for the alignment. And what we generate is, we generate big tables, so samples, all the 70,000 samples in, and the corresponding expression. In total, roughly 70,000. And so what we are going to provide is, we provide these count matrices at different levels. So we provide them at a gene level, so all reads that map to a specific gene. We provide them at an exon level, so if you're interested in specific exons, or at a junction level, so whenever all the reads that span two or more exons. And we also provide single base coverage. So that means you can really look at the single base, what is the coverage at a single base. And what you can do with those data is, for example, you can, so typically when people do gene expression, they use an annotation and calculate whatever, how much a gene is expressed. But you can also do like differential expression without any like known annotation, just calculate at a single base pair what is the coverage for one group and what is the coverage for other for another group and compare them. So that's why it's important to also provide the single base coverage. So why do we do that? So in general, we want to answer meaningful questions about human biology and the expression. And I mean, you can also and use this data for other things. For example, I have a lot of clinicians and physicians who have to write grants in the cancer center, and you can use like a publicly available data set to generate preliminary data for power calculations or something like that if you're using the same or similar like samples for your study. So this is particularly important for them. So there's one drawback. So people are usually required when they publish an expression data set, they have to publish the raw FASTQ, so the raw read files. But they are not really required to provide a nice table of clinical covariates or how we call it phenotype data set. So the data is typically really messy. So the only data set is the GTEx data set where it's like roughly fine. And so we have a postdoc, so actually Jeff Leek has a postdoc, Shannon, who now works on phenotype prediction, so machine learning methods to predict the phenotypes based on some learning tools. So for example, she uses the GTEx data and learns, for example, gender, which genes are like expressed for gender and not, and then tries to test and apply and predict the gender in the sequencing read archive data in the TCGA. And we do that for a couple of other markers. So that's like an entire talk for Shannon. So what did we do? So what are we going to provide? So we provide expression summaries of levels for genes, junction, exons, and coverage vectors. So we took all the 70,000 human samples from sequencing read archive, GTEx, and TCGA. We also have like a lot of workflows. So I mean, we just provide the data, but maybe we should also show what to do with them. So we have a lot of workflows how to do differential expression with these data sets. For example, they can use for DSeq2. We provide meta analysis how you can combine your data and GTEx data. We have annotation-free base level analysis. And we also provide like how to smaller studies replicate in bigger studies. So whenever you have a new data set and you want to see if it's replicating in another study or the other way around. So there's a bioconductor package recount that you can download and use with a like a 100 page vignette. And we have a Shiny app on our webpage. And here's just a screenshot of the Shiny app. So here's a lot of description and links to all the papers and files. And here you have some fields where you can search. For example, we have here one study which has this ID. You can search abstracts, so there are like 2,000 studies. You can search the abstract for a specific breast cancer, for example, and then all the studies showing up where the word breast cancer was mentioned in the abstract. And what you can download, you can just click here and you just download the on a gene exon, exon junction level, you just download the gene expression matrices, either at a count matrix or as an RSE. RSE is a bioconductor class, it's a range summarized experiments where you have the rectangle gene expression matrix and you have also a lot of like information for the columns and for the rows. And so that's pretty useful. And I just have one plot here to show this like annotation free. So we just took like two different types of breast cancer and we calculated. So here we just plot for one region of chromosome 3 the coverage for like people with a HER2 positive breast cancer tumor and for the triple node negative breast cancer. And this is a region in genome which wasn't annotated, but we can clearly see differences in expression. So maybe that's a new exon or something like this. This is something that you can find with the annotation free approach. So I work with clinicians, and one of the goals is to do eQTL analysis, and that's why I thought, okay, maybe I can use a recount data to just show how an eQTL analysis can be done with this type of data. So eQTL means usually a genomic locus, so for example a SNP, that influences the expression levels of a gene. So there's a SNP, there's a gene, and whatever, so if people have different like alleles, then maybe the expression of the gene is different. And what we typically do, we fit linear models, like billions of them, where the output is the gene expression and the input is the value of the SNP. Usually, typically, it's coded as 1, 2, 3 or 0, 1, 2. And we adjust for a couple of covariates. And then we calculate a couple of million tests, and usually there's a package matrix eQTL who can do that like really fast. And what we want to see is, for example, I pick one SNP and one gene, and on the y-axis we have the gene expression, on the x-axis we have the three different genotypes, and what we want to see is like for the different genotypes we have different expression levels. And so we have to distinguish between local and distant eQTLs, where the SNP and the gene are close or far away from each other. And typically, we focus on the cis or local eQTLs. We need a couple of data sets, so there's a lot of data manipulation has to be done in advance. So we need a gene expression data set. If you want to distinguish between local and distant eQTLs, we have to have the genomic locations, and the same for the SNPs. And I picked a popular data set, the GeoVadis data set. You can download the genotype data from their webpage. So it's like five populations and 465 cell lines from the 1,000 genome project. I downloaded the genotype data, and I did some pre-processing, like filtering with minor allele frequencies, so that I only keep SNPs who may be relevant. And I only did for the samples, so for one population, I think it was 92 samples, I did the entire eQTL analysis, and I took the expression data from recount. It takes approximately then 10 minutes to run these 5 million tests on matrix eQTL, and at the end we discovered 3,800 cis eQTLs and 127 trans eQTLs. We will add this workflow at some point to the recount vignette. And here's just the four lines of code that you have to do to download the data. You just load the library recount, you search for the study name, and here I've downloaded the gene expression data set, and you just do a scaling command because each sample can have like different amounts of. So the sequencing depths might be different, so you adjust for the total counts. And when you do linear models, you typically log transform. All right, at the end, you look at a plot like this, where on the on the x-axis we have the SNP position, on the y-axis we have the gene position, and each dot is like one significant eQTL, and we see most of them are like where the gene and the SNP are close to each other. And then, I mean, this is just an illustration of the workflow. Typically, then, you give a list, sort it by p-value to your collaborator, and then they chase down some of their eQTLs, or maybe they found some of the SNPs before in some genome-wide association studies, and they know exactly which locations they want to chase. All right, so all this is also now published in Nature Biotech, so you can go download the paper, but all the code and everything is free on GitHub. You find all the links on this shiny webpage. And particular thanks to Jeff, who also paid me for 2 years as a postdoc, and Leo and Abby, who did most of the work, and all the statisticians in the middle. We all provided all these workflows and so on. All right, thank you.
Thank you. So we have time for questions. Yep.
So we got samples from 70,000 samples, right, from different sources. And how did you curate the phenotypic information? Because I can imagine that people use different vocabularies across studies.
So that's like a project where Shannon is working on. So right now, what we did here, we took the RNA sequencing data, aligned them, and put them into matrices. And whenever there's phenotypic information, we just, let's say, add it as a text file. And it's like up to you if you trust them or not, because we just copied them more or less what's available. So there will be a fifth column at some point where we say this is a predicted phenotype or the predicted cell type, and you can work with that. So we are not working with it. So right now the phenotypic information is just like we just provide it as it was uploaded from the study.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah.
Other questions?
Okay.
You mentioned that you provide a gene expression level, yes?
Yes.
How do you tackle the ambiguous reads, which are mapped to multiple?
Right now, for the genes, so some reads, yeah. So right now they are excluded.
You miss a lot of information.
Yeah, no, it's not so low. So I don't have the exact percentage numbers, but for us, it's not so much. So that we are losing.
It can be sometimes even 30-40% of reads, which you would.
No, we are somewhere at 98% of like unique mapping.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you can read Abby's paper, so the rail RNA paper, how it's done exactly.
Hi. Why did you actually use not established algorithms like STAR to map your data, but like a rather uncommon algorithm?
Yes. So you have to ask this question, Abby. So one reason was, so his aligner was particularly useful to use Amazon Web Services. And so what we did, so he took the data, we never stored them somewhere, so he just loaded them into the web cloud of Amazon, and then the alignment was done. So yes, we could also use like different aligners. But yeah, so that's, yeah.
Thank you. There is more questions, but we don't have time for them. We start with, and Kim is actually going for playing, yeah? So yeah. You can catch him.
Now,
yeah, I'm leaving. Talk with him. It's a very interesting topic. So, thanks again.
Thank you.